It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka. Today is Thursday, March 21st. I'm Erin Fulton with Raven News. The Sitka Sound Sacro Herring Fishery went on two-hour notice Wednesday morning, and so far the fishery has yet to open. At a meeting Tuesday night, Alaska Department of Fish and Game managers reviewed their plans for the fishery this year and discussed last year's fishery and the results of spawn disposition surveys that they used to help determine the population size. For the last couple of years, the state has forecasted a large biomass of herring in Sitka Sound, of which approximately 20% is available for commercial harvest. But reduced market demand has meant fewer fishermen and processors participating, stretching out the fishery over a couple of weeks. Here's local fishery management biologist Aaron Dupuy.
Last year, it took a lot of effort and some unusual opening strategies. Like the time that we had Deep Inlet and Salisbury Sound open simultaneously. But we did have a few successful openings, and I think overall industry, we did about as good as we could with the situation that we had last year.
Dupuy said the fishery would be similar to last year's with a reduced fleet size and limited processing capacity compared to previous competitive fisheries. He expected to see 1,000 to 2,500 tons harvested per day, barely scratching the surface of this season's record 80,000-ton guideline harvest level.
Based on conversations I've had with processors, I expect we'll probably end up harvesting about an eighth of that if everything goes well for the commercial harvest. So around 10,000 tons, give or take a few, depending on how things go. So yeah, definitely don't anticipate harvesting 80,000 tons.
While the meeting was mostly a presentation, there was time for questions from the public. Traditional subsistence harvester Paulette Moreno asked how the department was folding traditional Tlingit knowledge into the model to forecast the herring biomass. State biometrician Sherry Dressel shared one example. The department has been trying to compare data from traditional harvesters about herring egg deposition.
I've asked about the indices that we're using. So in other words, is the index that we use for eggs, does it match up with what you are seeing? So in other words, we saw eggs go, our estimates of eggs have gone up this year. Has that matched or has it not matched what you have seen and what you know?
She says she learned that subsistence harvesters have been observing shorter spawning durations, and her department has tried to figure out ways to incorporate that information into the model. But as far as the actual numbers go, it isn't folded into the math. Marina was worried that the quality of the eggs on branches has continued to diminish. She urged the department to incorporate more traditional knowledge into their model.
I would like to encourage that as these things are set forward, that there is more traditional knowledge in these reports. A little bit more of an effort made in consideration when these numbers are done, because I know a lot of the harvesters are out on the water, and I do know that it takes an awful lot more for us to get the herring eggs that we so prize for our families and that we've done for tens of thousands of years.
In past years, Moreno and other traditional subsistence harvesters have called for a moratorium on the commercial harvest of herring. The Sitka Sound Sacro Herring Fishery remained on two-hour notice Wednesday, but did not open. ADF&G conducted aerial surveys from Cap Burnoff to Krestoff Sound and St. Lazaria Island, but no herring schools or spawn were observed. According to a press release, two unsuccessful test sets were attempted near Shoals Point. ADF&G will conduct another aerial survey on Thursday morning. Scientists have many ways to track fish populations, but they usually require seeing the fish. Now, researchers at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration are refining a method to collect data about what fish were present in an area up to 2 days after those fish have moved on. KCAW's Meredith Reddick reports.
Diana Betcher is a research geneticist at NOAA's Alaska Fisheries Science Center in Juneau. She says when fish swim, they shed scales, slime, and other tiny fragments into the water. Those fragments contain DNA, and they can provide a breadcrumb trail for scientists looking to learn about fish populations.
eDNA is environmental DNA, and it's sort of a really simple concept at its heart. It's the fact that all organisms shed DNA or genetic material into the environment, and that can be water or air or soil.
Betcher says collecting environmental DNA, or eDNA, is less time-intensive than some other methods. Scientists can scoop up seawater and test it to get a picture of what species of fish have recently passed through.
eDNA has sort of grown as this way of trying to shortcut some of the amount of time that goes into those other ways of counting fish.
Betcher is the author of a paper published March 12 that will help scientists better interpret the data in those scoops of seawater. She says while the signs can stay in the water for up to 48 hours after fish leave an area, that signal might be affected by factors like tide and water temperature.
So, you know, if you have a really strong current down, whatever, downstream of a whole bunch of fish, do you see that signal changing because the current's changing or the wind is changing or the tide is changing?
Betcher looked to net pens full of hatchery chum salmon in Juneau's Amalga Harbor for a dense, consistent source of eDNA. She found the signal left by the chum salmon was strongest at the water's surface and disappeared faster during outgoing tides. Betcher says this study was just one step towards making eDNA a more useful tool. In the meantime, eDNA is already being used to expand where scientists can track fish, like for Arctic fish communities under sea ice.
Another that we're really excited about is looking at changing species distributions in kind of like the subarctic and the Arctic. So what do those fish communities look like and how much are they changing year over year and throughout a calendar year?
Betcher hopes the data collected by filtering water under the sea ice will give researchers a snapshot of fish communities they otherwise would be unable to access. In Sitka, I'm Meredith Reddick.
You can read the full paper on eDNA at our website, kcaw.org. The 75th annual Juneau Lions Club Gold Medal Basketball Tournament kicked off last weekend in Juneau. Throughout this week, more than 500 people from across Southeast Alaska will attend to watch nearly 50 games. KTOO's Clarice Larson spent some time at the tournament and chatted with attendees and players about what it means to be a part of the event.
Marcelo Quinto was just 6 years old when the first ever gold medal basketball tournament took place in Juneau in 1947. He's in his 80s now, and he doesn't remember much about that tournament, beyond one very clear thing.
It was jammed, because there was no TV then.
The location of the tournament has changed since then. Instead of the cramped Capitol School, it's now at the Juneau Douglas High School Yada'at Kathle Gymnasium. He says other things have changed too.
These kids are faster, I think. They're faster. A lot of the rules have changed.
This year's tournament is special. It marks a historic 75 years of competition, disrupted only by the COVID-19 pandemic, which hit the pause button for a few years. For Quinto, the tournament, which is older than the state of Alaska, represents decades of memories.
The greatest thing about this tournament really is being able to see all your friends from all the Southeast, from Ketchikan, all the way up.
The first game kicked off Sunday morning, and games will continue daily throughout this week. In total, there'll be 48 games played by 25 different regional adult teams, competing for titles in four brackets. Tim Wilson, a Lions Club co-chair for this year's tournament, says for many, this tournament represents something much greater than the game of basketball. In 1947, it started as a way to raise money for Boy Scouts. But now, Wilson says it transcends the court.
For it to be in the 75th year is really special to us. I mean, I don't think when they started 75 years ago, I don't know if they envisioned it lasting 75 years. I always say that gold medal is one big, huge family. I honestly believe that.
Orion Dibdahl is a player on the Huna B bracket team this year. He recently graduated from JDHS, where last year he was selected by coaches around the state with the Alaska Association of Basketball Coaches as a senior all-star. Now, he's playing basketball at Centralia College in Washington, but he says he couldn't resist coming home for spring break and playing on his home court again,
Probably since birth, I've been here at these games, watching my dad play and just watching all these teams battle. Kind of a dream come true. Been waiting to play for Hoonah for a long time.
Dibdahl says gold medal's roots run deep, not just for his family, but for Southeast Alaska. His family is from Hoonah. Many teams have players who don't actually live in the communities they represent, but they still have close connections to them. For many, gold medal is the one time a year they can connect with loved ones.
It means everything just to see family members, friends from other communities. This tournament's more than basketball. It's kind of like a reunion.
In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
Sabin Power! I'm Erin Fulton, and this has been Raven News.